Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on the evolving world of sports science. I'm Andrew Rizza, an athlete trainer with decades of experience in professional, collegiate, and high school sports.
And I'm Cameron Roth, an orthopedic surgeon and a consultant for the Chicago White Sox.
In each episode, we'll explore the real-world challenges and opportunities facing today's human performance professionals.
Our hands-on experience is transforming sports medicine and breaking barriers through innovation and teamwork.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. Dr. Roth and I are going to start a series called Clinical Conversations, which is going to be a 10 to 15-minute session of us talking about our clinics and what we tend to see. And this is episode one. Dr. Roth, welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Exciting.
What do you want to talk about today? What's on the agenda?
I want to talk about my least favorite thing to see in clinic, which is tennis elbow, also known as lateral epicondylitis.
Yeah, I think that's great because we do see a lot of that in clinic as well. And I think there's a lot of clinicians that don't know how to treat appropriately. So why don't you start it off on what you see and what some of your experiences are?
So I think tennis elbows in all shapes and sizes sort of pathology. I think it's characterized as an overuse injury, but most people just come in with lateral-sided elbow pain, but it's not even specifically elbow pain. It's sometimes forearm pain, sometimes up into the upper arm. It can really even radiate into the wrist and digits or the shoulder. And I think people's biggest complaint is, you know, pain when doing certain twisting or repetitive activities, but people will also complain of stiffness, especially in the morning. So a lot of people sleep with their arms bent or their elbows bent, and then trying to extend your arm and make your arm straight, that can be very, very painful. And that's almost debilitating for a lot of people. So people will come in, as soon as they start pointing to the lateral side or the outside of their elbow, I think tennis elbow is a relatively easy diagnosis to make. So you'll press on really the insertion of the forearm extensors on the lateral epicondyle or on the outside of the elbow there where they attach, and they're usually pretty tender. The one caveat is, as a hand and upper extremity surgeon, there's something called radial tunnel syndrome, where the radial nerve runs through area or a tunnel in the forearm, but it's actually further down or more distal down the forearm. It's about 5 centimeters from the lateral epicondyle. So every once in a while, you can think someone has tennis elbow and you're pressing around the elbow and you say, what's going on? Say, it doesn't really hurt there. And then if you go just a couple centimeters further down distal, you press on it, that's really where the radial nerve is. But honestly, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. So I say, yeah, you have tennis elbow. And then I have a packet that I give people. You've been doing this much longer than I have. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of this because we got, you know, we call it the country club injury. I mean, there's a lot of tennis players and golfers and, golfers get it as well. And we do get some overhead athletes with it. Sometimes I'll see with pitchers if they're throwing because of the extensor mechanism of trying to release the ball and then get their hand to kind of slow down as they're coming through. But I think one of the things I kind of look at it as far as rehabilitation goes, I think a lot of people think rest and just let it rest. And we know that rest will ultimately make it better, but we know physical therapy will obviously help it improve at a little bit faster rate if you give it a better environment. But I always look at it as being slow and controlled eccentric exercise. I think people try to rip through repetitions, and I feel like that doesn't do it any good because we know that tension over time is the best recipe for some of these tendon pathologies. So for us, we do use chosen modalities. Maybe if somebody likes moist heat or ice, that's fine, but that's not going to speed anything up. I'd rather do more manual interventions, maybe grassed and using KT tape to help unload or decompress the tendon area to help them be more comfortable with their daily work style or daily lifestyle and work. And then we maybe have therapists in the clinic that might dry needle. Is that's almost like if you could take your finger and then penetrate deep into the tissue, that's going to help to relax the tissue more and also generate more blood flow to help to heal around the tendon area. And then we don't see a lot of people go get injections, meaning like cortisone but there are some, I think, that get orthobiologics, which maybe you can touch a little bit more upon. if you see that in your clinic or if you guys offer that in your clinic.
You build recovery plans, rehab protocols, return to sport timelines because you know outcomes don't happen by accident. Your financial life deserves the same intention. Bet Bodie is a fee-only fiduciary firm that starts with a plan. Your goals planning statement, a personalized roadmap that keeps your money aligned with where you're actually headed. Built around your life, backed by conviction, see what real planning looks like at betbodie.com.
Looking to get back in the game and feel your absolute best? Boston Orthopedics and Wellness has you covered. At Boston Orthopedics and Wellness, they're all about helping you recover faster, re-energize your body, and truly revitalize your health. Whether you're dealing with an injury, looking for cutting-edge recovery therapies, or exploring innovative treatments for orthopedic conditions, their expert team is ready to guide you every step of the way. From advanced regenerative treatments like PRP, stem cell therapy, and peptides, to performance and wellness services like NAD Plus therapy, men's health optimization, and weight management programs, they offer a comprehensive, personalized approach to getting you back to peak performance. This isn't just treatment. It's a path to moving better, feeling stronger, and living pain-free. Boston Orthopedics and Wellness is where your comeback starts. Mention Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast to receive 15% off your first scheduled appointment. Learn more and start your journey today at bostonorthopedicandwellness.com.
What are you telling patients when they come in their PCP or primary care sports medicine orthopedic surgeon has diagnosed them with lateral epicondylitis? How long do you expect to keep them in your clinic going through structured therapy?
I mean, I usually tell them you're at least looking at 6 weeks of therapy, if not longer, depending on how they respond to the treatment and if they're doing their homework. You know, some, if we get them to that 4 to 6 week range and they're not responding, we may send them back to the doctor, but we know what the doctor's going to say, like continue therapy or here, let's try an injection. So for us, we just say, let's get you into a good program. Let's get you exercising. Let's get your symptoms down to a manageable rate or a level. And then let's make sure you have the best education to be able to change the behaviors that are creating this problem. And then we'll kind of send you on the way with a good home program. Hopefully we can kind of mitigate some of that stuff. So that's what we do.
The literature tells us that about 90 to 95% of lateral epicondylitis will resolve on its own, quote unquote, burnout over about 12 to 18 months. I think the minimum's maybe about 9 months. And I'm not sure, I always lead with that with my patients, and I'm not sure if that's what they want to hear or that's not what they want to hear, because some people are very excited, oh, this is going to get better, and that's great, but then they hear the time frame and then they're disappointed that it's going to take longer than 1 to 2 days to get better. On the other hand, it's a very frustrating conversation because I provide them with a lot of options, therapy being one of them, you know, ultrasound shockwave therapy, dry needling. We could talk about corticosteroid injection, but PRP injection, activity modification, wrist bracing, counterforce bracing, etc. And then I say, to be honest, it's going to get better on its own. The only thing that has actually really been shown in the literature to shorten healing time is therapy. Mm-hmm. There are things that can make you feel better temporarily, corticosteroid injections, bracing, dry needling, et cetera. Yeah. But the thing that may shorten this 12 to 18 month time frame is therapy. So all the things that you were talking about. So a lot of people leave pretty dissatisfied, I think, because it's debilitating and frustrating, especially for the country club people. But honestly, right, for anybody, if you're a mechanic, if you're a mother, there's a lot of things you can't do and you have trouble doing. People have trouble sleeping. But I try to lead with the good news, but it's one of my least favorite conversations.
I tell patients now, I give them, you know, very transparent timeline, and I just let them know, like, I've had lateral epicondylitis just being in the profession that I'm in. I use my hands a lot for work. I had it. I know that it's going to take X. I didn't go through traditional therapy. I did my own therapy because I can. I did some manual therapy on my own. I just went through and did my normal workouts. I didn't change my weight training routine. It hurt doing reverse curls or doing front squats if I was holding the bar in that position where I hyperflex and hyper extend my wrist, but I still did it. And 6 months goes by, it disappears. It went away. And I haven't had any episodes since. So I kind of give them that as being like a little bit of a roadmap. Like, continue doing the stuff you're doing, but let's stress it in a way that we can help to get it stronger and cross-sectionally strengthen it in order for you to start to feel better. So people do. I have a gentleman right now that's coming in, and cupping has been helping him. He's a golfer. He's been with us for probably 5 weeks now. Low-grade lateral epicondylitis, but we started with some just manual therapy, really focused on eccentric work, like I mentioned before. And then the cupping, he says, tends to make him feel better. And I KT-taped him a couple times. He went away for a few weeks and then came back, and he's like, you know what, I feel pretty good. So this week, hopefully, I'm going to discharge him at, you know, probably right around 6 weeks. So,
do you find that the KT tape is helpful?
I use it on a lot of different things. I feel like you can decompress across the area. So if I, what you want to do is get them into a position of a little bit of stretch. And then what I do is I just lay it on. I don't even stretch the tape. There's about a 10% recoil rate. So if you just lay it over the tissue, the elastic properties of the KT tape will pull it about 10% of the tape structure. And then what that does is you can pinpoint where the pain is. So say it's right on the extensor bundle and they can point with one finger where it is. You can cross-section that over the tape. So basically you make an X. And what that does is you lay that one piece of tape and then you focus the tape on the center of it and then lay the cross-section over it. And it basically lifts the tissue up, kind of decompresses it. And that makes people feel better. It just gives good neurofeedback, right? And it's like anything else. Like if you took the air cast pillows, like the little small ones over the elbow to put pressure, what we're doing is just changing and trying to trick where the attachment site is, right? So with the KT tape, it's almost just a neurofeedback to the brain to release hopefully some of that natural anti-inflammatories and pain, like the endorphins and Keflins that your body can produce. So that typically, I find, makes people feel better. Even if it's not, like, they're like, oh, that feels good. So it works for people. Anecdotally, it's been shown to help our patients. So
yeah, I mean, anecdotal evidence, arguably, if you've done this long enough, is as good as level one evidence. Yeah. And you learn a lot as a practitioner. You've been doing this for 30 years. So the vast, vast majority of these don't need surgery, like greater than 95%.
Yeah.
And there's a couple, you know, there's the, if you want to use brand names, there's the 10X procedure, which is that ultrasound guided sort of treatment using those high frequency sound waves to break down any of that degenerative tissue. Mm-hmm. Which there's a practitioner around here who does it under local anesthesia. I don't do it. I saw it once in practice, but I will recommend patients try it if they've tried everything else, because the last thing I want to do is operate on them. I will tell you, I have operated on a few tennis elbow patients over the past 3 years, and they actually do quite well. Mm-hmm. That's not an indication to do surgery, but if they failed, these were three mid-40s men who had all failed about 2 years of conservative treatment. So what you do is you make an incision over the lateral elbow and you find the diseased tendon, which is usually the extensor carpi radialis brevis, and then you debride it and you take down all the degenerative tissue, and you can either leave it, suture it back to the bone, or suture it back and put an anchor into the bone, and the healthy tendon is supposed to heal into the prepared bone and essentially remove that painful pseudo-inflammatory tissue. And in my very, very limited experience, it works. And actually, the literature says it works 80 to 90% in, mm-hmm. in some studies, but it doesn't need to be done the vast majority of the time.
Objectively for you, are you looking for weakness, decreased function? When do you say, I mean, conservative, but well, when do you say, like, we're going to do this?
Oh, you just ask the patient, you know, what have you done? How long has it been? And how do you feel? What percentage are you better? Mm-hmm. I'm 0% better in 14 months.
Yeah.
Well, we should have a discussion.
Yeah, we got to figure out what to do.
I'm 50% better in 3 months. All right, great. Well, let's keep doing therapy.
Let's keep doing it.
Or people can feel themselves rounding a corner.
What do you think the percentage of people this happens to? Do you have any idea what it might be? Is it?
The epidemiology of tennis elbow, I actually don't know.
Okay.
I'd have to look that up. I don't know. You know, we have selection bias, right? So as an upper extremity surgeon and as an athletic trainer, you're seeing a decent amount of tennis elbow.
Yeah, right, right. One question for you. Differential diagnosis, you spoke about radial tunnel syndrome. How many of those do you see, and what's the treatment for that?
It's probably the better question.
In under 2 minutes.
How many see me and or see somebody and don't get actually diagnosed? I trained in Chicago where radial tunnel was a big diagnosis. So I would say I'm more tuned into if someone has radial tunnel, but it would be pain over the forearm, over the dorsal forearm and dorsal hand with no paresthesias, no weakness, tenderness over the radial tunnel that has failed, wrist bracing therapy, negative EMG, and the key is giving a diagnostic and therapeutic. I give a corticosteroid injection, so it's half local anesthesia and half corticosteroid, and I inject it right into the radial tunnel, and I tell the patient to come back in 2 weeks and keep a journal on how their symptoms are doing and a percentage of how much they feel better. And if it's radial tunnel, the patients will come back and say, for a week, I had zero pain. I was cured.
Good.
Yeah. Or something like that. Yeah. And you're like, okay, well, this is radial tunnel. And then you decompress the radial tunnel. You make an incision over the dorsal forearm and you find the posterior interosseous nerve. And there's a few spots where it's compressed and you take the pressure off it. And usually you can actually see the point of compression in the nerve. So there's a shape change or a color change of the nerve. And I have to say, you know, as a trainee, I had most of my mentors were pro radial tunnel, believed in it. I had one mentor that didn't believe in radial tunnel. I will tell you, I have learned so much about radial tunnel in 3 years of practice. It is real. And the surgery works if you have radial tunnel. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. I'll keep that in mind if we have any patients that aren't responding.
Yeah, it's just important.
Like, for differential.
If you're palpating over the lateral epicondyle or the external quad and you're doing it for like 30 seconds and they're not exhibiting any pain, and when you do resisted wrist extension and they don't have any pain, and ask them, I do something called a laptop test where I have them pick up, I guess, a laptop or a
just
book
like this.
Or something. Yeah, pick it up like this.
Yeah, and that's to look at the pain.
Right. And if they don't have any pain, they may have a little pain, but people with tennis elbow, you can palpate their flexor.
Oh, yeah. They'll jump off the table.
They'll jump off the table.
Yeah.
And their laptop test is great. So those people are like, nah, I don't know. That's not my spot. Move your thumb down between like the brachioradialis and ECRL or just like 5 centimeters distal to your lateral epicondyle and like press in there. And some people who have radial tunnel will jump off the table. And then some people will say, oh, that's uncomfortable. Test their other side. And they'll
and
be
see
like,
if it's comparable.
There's a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, noticeable difference.
You're like, okay. Let's inject the radial tunnel. It's awesome. It's great because people get better.
That's great.
Let's talk about cortisone injections.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about those. So everybody everybody's afraid of cortisone injections. Can you give us some debunk some injections?
Cortisone myths? Yes. So here's the cortisone injection deal for lateral epicondylitis. The literature tells us that cortisone injections give significant pain relief for about 6 weeks, make people feel significantly better. However, can delay your total time of healing. So it's a short-term remedy, which may cost you on the back end. The risk of a cortisone injection is minimal. You can always have an injection site irritation, injection site infection. If you give too many corticosteroid injections, you can get something called fat atrophy, where the fat around the injection site decreases. So in thin people, that can be obvious. If you're darker skinned, you can have a skin hypopigmentation where your where your skin becomes lighter. That's after multiple corticosteroid injections. I do not offer my patients corticosteroid injections for lateral epicondylitis for the specific reason that I tell them it's going to make your recovery longer. I've probably injected 5 patients over a couple, 3 years. Because these are patients that are playing in golf tournaments or who have these really heavy duty jobs of, you know, towing cattle across the Southwest. And they're like, look, I'm just not coming to the doctor. Just give me a cortisone injection. And say, fuck.
I think that's what I'm going to do when I move out there is become a cattle herder when I retire. So you might be seeing me. I got a cowboy hat. I don't really. I have my other hat. So what are your thoughts on topical medications like a Voltaren or even like oral anti-inflammatories and pain medications?
I'm always for oral anti-inflammatories in a very limited fashion. Less pills, the better. The GI side effects are real. You can't really take, they're contraindicated if you're on anticoagulation, more or less. Yeah. So that's something you have to be cognizant of. You know, I like ones with longer acting half-life than taking 4 pills every 68 hours, maybe taking 2 pills in the morning, 2 pills in the afternoon, or just taking 1 pill overall during the day. Anti-inflammatories, sure. Short course of anti-inflammatories is fine. A short course of a methylprednisolone dose pack is fine if you don't have, you know, uncontrolled blood glucose. Reasonable once if you want some short-term pain relief. Topicals, any topicals are fine with me. I'm not sure if Voltaren works. Some people say it does. I honestly don't know. But anything to keep a patient, anything that's safe that keeps the patient out of the operating room, I would recommend. CBD cream and CBD oil actually works for more than 50% of patients, anecdotally. Bunch of over-the-counter stuff, Bengay, Icy Hot, Tiger Balm, that kind of stuff. Yeah, anything that keeps patients out of the operating room.
That's great. I love it.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to our clinical conversations. If you'd like to hear more about a specific topic, please send us an email at info@behindthesportsmedicine.com and see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. Follow us on social media and check out our website.
The information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. Please consult a licensed healthcare provider for guidance related to your specific situation. We'll see you next week.